And to our newsmaker segment, Philadelphia's new police commissioner, Kevin Bethel, is with us now. He was tapped by Mayor Parker to replace Danielle Outlaw, and he's spent just about a month on the job. Bethel is a veteran of the PPD with 30 years on the force and was most recently the chief of school safety for the School District of Philadelphia.
That experience will be critical for tackling the big issues facing the city and the department: gun violence, the opioid epidemic, staffing shortages. Commissioner Kevin Bethel, a lot on your plate. Thanks for spending some time with us here at Studio 2.
Thank you for having me. I thank you for that segue, kissing segue.
Yeah, if you have thoughts
happy
on that.
Happy Valentine's to everyone out there, my wife, my daughters, and all the everyone out there in your listening audience.
I love it. I love it. And so we're going to jump right in, Commissioner Bethel. The mayor has repeatedly said that public safety is her number one priority and that she wants to end this sense of lawlessness and restore a sense of order and lawfulness. In many ways, that's my question to you is a two-parter. First, what does law and order look like to you? And what are a couple of the things you think the PPD needs to focus on to accomplish it?
Well, I mean, you know, law and order, I mean, really looks to me, you know, when we have a city that enforces the laws, right, that does not allow many of those quality of life issues that impact our community on a daily basis, addressing those, at the same time addressing, you know, the violence that we see. We've often stayed very focused on the violence and the crime that's occurring across the city, particularly our shootings and homicides. But what we oftentimes forget about is all of the 60,000 other offenses that are impacting our community on a daily basis. And so that's why the mayor astutely, when she was creating her safety plan, that we're embarking on now and embracing in our work, was really focused on those quality of life issues that address, you know, impacts our community on a daily basis. And so when you don't address those issues, when you don't take a focus on all crime, then you give this feeling of lawlessness because people look around and say, well, you're not doing any of these things. And so we very have to be very intentional in that work. And that's part of our work now as we build our crime plan. Based off, as you saw, when I was appointed by the mayor and shortly after my inauguration, she signed into law, you know, several plans, you know, that we have to take, emergency plans that we have to embark on, ATVs, again, quality of life issue that, you know, often does not raise the bar but drives many of our community members crazy as they fly down Broad Street. Retail theft, you know, we say that as a small, but, you know, its impact on our economy. It's impacting our small stores, our big box stores, as we look at Kensington and the work we're going to do down in there. So we're working through our 100-day plan. The mayor has tasked us with to complete in that time period to really put forth our initial plan, and then we'll follow up with a much larger 5-year strategic plan to share with the community what we'll be doing moving forward over the years.
But if you're going to crack down on those quality of life issues, what types of punishments will you levy? And do you worry that will, you know, get people into a system, into a cycle that they cannot get out of? Because I do think that can be the criticism with the lower level crackdown.
I think we have to be careful, right? I mean, it's a certainty that we often are missing. The consequences you can always been, you know, negotiated, right? That's been negotiated in the courtroom. Like, there's nobody expecting that someone arrested for retail, small level retail, would go into prison. Mm-hmm. Any period of time, right? But the reality is the certainty of the work, and then the consequences. As you know, I did a diversion program, right? Kids were being arrested, and we made the decision that we would divert them away from the arrest, and we send it to programming. There's a certainty that the child was addressed the behavior that may have led to that diversion. There's a certainty of action in that. But at the end, the consequences are moving them into a model where they can get services.
So might that be a model for someone arrested for low-level
absolutely.
Retail
yeah,
theft?
Yeah, yeah.
So
we're
going to use like a diversion-style program, potentially.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want this to – I mean, we're going to use the myriad of tools available to us, expanding our diversion work for young people who may be arrested for diversion – I mean, for retail theft. We have a pilot program now that will expand. I mean, the courts have diversionary tools that – but what you cannot do is allow someone to walk into a store and just randomly steal items without any action taken. That's not going to benefit anyone, and it oftentimes creates this feeling of lawlessness that you can walk in any store in the city of Philadelphia and take whatever you want, and there will be no certainty of action. I mean, and that has to change, right? And it's part of the work that we're going to be embarking on.
You've spent about 10 years, the past 10 years before coming back to PPD, sort of working on diversion and working to crack that school to prison pipeline. What did you learn from that work as far as the balance between law and order, right? And this whole police reform?
Yeah, I really have learned a lot in that work is to, you know, as I started down my diversion work, I wasn't sure what it meant when you heard that a kid's been traumatized, you know, a kid who grew up in a neighborhood, pull up your bootstraps, you know what I mean? I got out the neighborhood, why can't you? Until I really learned what trauma was, right? I wasn't sexually abused. I wasn't physically abused. I wasn't placed in a, you know, foster home, or my parents were not in the house, had a strong mom, raised by a single mother. And so that work started to inform me about how oftentimes, because our kids live in such difficult environments, that they're how it manifests itself. We can't ignore the fact that we have some of the most poor, we're one of the poorest cities in the nation, but we have some pockets that are almost double that, right? And so we know what happens in that. And so what I learned from that is, you know, oftentimes our kids act out in a way because that's what they've learned in the space that they're in. And we have the opportunity, particularly like in our diversion, to redirect them into a different direction, right? We know that a child who has one positive adult in their lives can totally change the trajectory of where they're going. And so me going into the school district really helped me see that even more because I was with those kids on a daily basis.
And quick follow-up for that. I mean, how do you apply some of the things you learned to a place like Kensington, where that is a top priority for the city as well? Like, how do you apply that, but also, like, making people feel safe and deal with a problem that, you know, they want to see change happen?
Yeah, I mean, we'll do a phased approach. I mean, I will share that it's not acceptable that I understand the issue of addiction, but when you have children who have to live in a situation where they're looking at needles on the ground and people are defecating on the streets and exposing the community overall, we're going to do a phased approach, you know, in our work to really make the awareness early part of our operations. We'll be working with our collaborative partners. You know what I mean? I appointed Commissioner Pedro Rosario to lead that work. He's down on the ground now meeting with those entities. So we'll start a slow process of awareness, working with those individuals to get them to give them the opportunity to move off the street. When we do move into a space of enforcement, we're also continue to have that part of our work to give people the opportunity. When we do make an arrest, to give them the opportunity to move them into services, move them into programming, to get them out of their addiction, help them with their addiction. And so we'll have a very humane process. But we are going to clean up Kensington. We are going to give the community the relief that they've been asking for years. It is not acceptable, as I've shared in many conversations, to be sitting at a school in Conwell Middle School where, you know, my principal's attacked with a knife and a screwdriver, or that bullets are coming through our school across the street, and we believe that activity is acceptable. And so we have to take a very comprehensive approach in dealing with Kensington.
So in the case of Kensington, mm-hmm. then, if, you know, there's someone who's using drugs, not selling drugs, using mm-hmm. drugs, and they are arrested maybe once or twice, and they do refuse whatever services you're providing, that means they're going to prison, essentially?
Well, we'll see how that goes, right? I mean, we'll walk through that process as we bring individuals in. We're very hopeful that we create a very comprehensive model that we will be able to convince that person to get into treatment, whether that continuous behavior is going to result in them going into, incarcerated or held in prison will be something the courts will determine. But we are not going to ignore the ability to use enforcement to be able to take, to be able to restore the area back to where it should be.
So, simply put, people will be arrested.
People will be arrested.
Yeah. There was a recent a number of arrests recently in Kensington. And we did a report on WHYY.org that folks were, residents there were saying they saw an increased presence in police. They were worried about over-policing. I want you to speak to those residents who want safer streets, right? But at the same time, don't want to feel like, you know, there is this increased scrutiny of their individual actions.
Well, I mean, it's a balanced approach, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is, I mean, as a particular organization was doing, you know, search warrants down in that area. I mean, we have to understand that underneath all of the open air drug market, that is one of the most lucrative drug areas in America, right? Mm-hmm. And on the East Coast. And right. And so there is a responsibility from law enforcement to continue to address the level of drugs coming out of that community. I mean, so to your earlier point, yeah. I'm arresting people on the street who may have, you know, possession or user. But what is also driving the issue of drugs in that area and citywide and up the East Coast are individuals who are selling fentanyl or heroin and other high level products on our streets.
Yeah.
And so we have a duty to do all of that and make sure that, and there was a large seizure in that operation that happened over there. And so we're going to go across the entire spectrum. Those who are selling drugs are also going to become under scrutiny and will remain under scrutiny as we continue to do our work, not just in Kensington, but across the city.
I want to ask you a broader criminology question here. During the early part of the pandemic, we saw this huge spike in murders here in Philadelphia, but really across the country. Now it started to come down here in Philadelphia and across the country. And the whole time, the conversation was about what police are doing or not doing. And this seems like it's what always happens when there's a crime wave in either direction. And I'm sitting here wondering whether policing has anything to do with this at all. And it's really just a reflection mm-hmm. of, you know, an unstable or destabilized society. When you see big crime waves, do you think, hey, your first order thought is, what are police doing? Or do we have the wrong way of thinking about these crime waves, which do seem cyclical on some level?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's take your issue of the COVID and having the highest number of homicides and shootings in the history of Philadelphia. We knew, and folks would say that, right, that COVID, because of everything shutting down, you know, that would cause this spike. And so we're seeing a natural, you know, regression to the mean is indicated across the city, where, you know, many of the big cities across the nation are starting to trend down. But we're also seeing that we're trending still above, you know, pre-COVID, but still above our numbers where we should be. And so does policing have an absolute part of that? Absolutely. Right. But it is also a collective group of individuals who are working in this space. So we can't do it by ourselves. You know, it's the community work that we're doing alongside of our community partners that also helps that. But there are, I think I would make the argument, you know, that if policing doesn't have, policing has a role in keeping order in our community. But it's not the complete, you know, we're part of a system, mm-hmm. right? It's not just the policing that is the only ones who can help that. But there are certain trends that we can see that we can actually move police officers into areas, you know, whether we're using hotspot policing, place-based policing, offender-focused policing, and we can see through the data that by doing that in an effective and strategic way, we can see reductions. It's not the sole reductions, but there's clearly a role that policing plays in reducing violence in the city of Philadelphia.
So I want to zoom out a bit because, you know, you were at the PPD for 29 years, took 10 years, did some other work, very meaningful work, and now you're back at PPD. I want to talk about morale within the department because it had been really low. I had talked to officers. It was tough to recruit because of that. How has morale, what's the status of morale, and how are you doing to shift that? And then how is that when you tie it to recruiting and trying to fill some of those vacancies?
Well, it all ties together to your point. We need to, you know, morale is one of the fuels that does all of it, gives us all the fuels to get up in each and every day. I will sit here and tell you that the morale of the police department is very low for a combination of things. Coming out of the riots and other activity and then going through a phase where defunding policing and the loudest voice saying that we don't want you in our community, we don't, even though that goes well against the studies and the surveys that have been put out into even our more marginalized communities. But they say they want good policing, constitutional policing, but they do want policing in their communities.
Yeah.
And so when these voices have been the voices that the men and women have been hearing for the last 5 years, my objective and the mayor, who has been totally supportive of our law enforcement and the work that I'm about to embark on, is really elevating us back to who we are. We get back to being, if you have a young officer who walks into the door 5 years ago and told, don't do anything, you're not valued, you're not this, you're not that, then oftentimes what would you expect that officer to engage in and have their morale high? Yeah. My job is to get them back to being police officers again, mm-hmm. getting back to doing very good, constitutional, community-based policing that the mayor has gave our charge, and then let folks let you start to report about all the good things that we're doing in our community, all the good things that we're bringing, and the success we're having. And through that process, you know, we definitely believe if we brand ourselves right, we communicate properly, we can start to bring in. Some people are going to come here as guardians mm-hmm. because they want to do mentoring and they want to work in the community, and some men and women are going to come here because they want to be a warrior. Right. They like the, you know, coming from a military background. They like the, you know, come in, but also understanding how to do community policing. And so I think as we elevate our product and elevate who we are as an entity, we can be successful. We have some of the best men and women in the city or Philadelphia police officers. They want to do good in our community. And I'm going to create every opportunity for them to be that partner with the community that we serve.
We're wrapping up now, but you're here at the beginning mm-hmm. of your tenure as commissioner. We hope you come back on the show a year, two, 3 years from now.
Or even sooner.
If you come back 3 years from now, real quick, what would you have liked to accomplish, let's say, by 3 years?
I'm hopeful that the mayor has put forth a larger plan of safety, you know, for us as an agency, as a city. And I'm hoping that, you know, we've restored hope, that the community feels hope again. Because it's not just about the numbers. It's how those individuals.
But is there a number before we could wrap up that you would really want to move?
Yeah, well, I mean, I want to move all the numbers, right? I want to see fewer homicides in the city of Philadelphia. I was fortunate enough to work under Commissioner Ramsey where we got the numbers well below 200, 300. And though we're staffing officers, I think we can be there again. I want to see fewer young people being shot on our streets. I want to see fewer people arrested and be able to do it in an effective way. But we have to have hope, and I got hope.
And we hope you do come back, by the way.
In
less than a year. That's Philadelphia Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel. Thanks for joining us today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.